Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ciao, you guys are listening to this on Easter Sunday as well as April Fool's Day is coming. And there's some tomfoolery you need to address. When patriarchy is so enshrined in marriages, it does very little to protect women, both inside marriages but also outside of marriages.
That's
right,
so good. Redemption is free for everybody. You can be redeemed now, you could also be redeemed in jail.
Yeah, sometimes you need to go to jail first.
And thank you very much.
Brokenness can exist within marriages,
within marriage, within and oftentimes that is where it exists.
Jeez. Hello and welcome to the To My Sisters podcast. I'm Renee
and I'm Courtney, and we are your online sisters and hosts of the To My Sisters podcast.
Now, we are all about promoting the wellness, growth and development of a community of sisters across the world.
And in today's conversation, we are going to be touching on divorce, culture, and the modern day woman. Yeah. Now, damn. If you're on our side of YouTube, then maybe you have seen a video that has been going viral of a debate of some people who are based in Nigeria having a conversation on whether divorce is right, acceptable, damaging, should be normalized, all of these pressing questions for our modern society. And of course, there were differing opinions, and it was a highly triggering video. As I watched it, my blood was definitely boiling.
My blood pressure actually increased.
My blood was definitely boiling. Highly recommend that you actually watch it if you have the stamina of heart. If you're anything like me and you tend to shout at a screen, then maybe you don't want to. But yeah, that's the source material for today's episode. And we are going to be discussing our thoughts, not just on said video, but also the topics which were discussed.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Divorce, its role in modern day society, especially for women, for the sisters who, you know, may be coming from more traditional backgrounds, who may be coming from faith-based backgrounds. You guys know about us. We've been on this podcast for years. You should know, you know, we're Christians, but also we are, you know, first generation immigrants. Yeah. Our parents have their own traditional values. So yeah, we're going to be talking about that while still living in the West, where things are sometimes more normalized. So yes, set to be a very interesting discussion.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Please lock in, because we do want to know what your thoughts are. So if you are listening on Spotify, leave a comment. If you're listening on YouTube, leave a comment. But before we get into it in true TMS fashion, do we have any housekeeping announcements?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Either. I don't actually think, I think the house the house has been kept swept pretty much. Just a reminder that we do have a book out that you should probably purchase.
Oh my gosh,
yeah,
yes.
There's that thing called the To My Sisters book that we wrote like a year or more or so ago. Our paperback has actually been out and available for just over a month now.
Crazy.
She is beautiful. She is aesthetically pleasing. She is exciting. And you should pick her up, not just for you, but also for a friend.
Pick her up for your mom, for your cousin, for your sister, for your daughter.
For your girlfriend, your partner.
Honestly, get it on Audible as well. There is an audiobook version if you're anything like me and you love a good audio something. Or if you just love the podcast and you want to hear our voices, read the book out to you.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, so go and get a copy of that on Audible. Okay, since there is no further housekeeping announcements apart from welcome to QT, April, essentially. Wow. Crazy. I think this is the last day of March this episode will come out.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you've been assessing your goals.
Listen,
and you've done your Q1 review.
Chad, you might be listening to this on April Fool's Day. This makes sense for us to be talking about.
It's not a joke.
Yeah.
So.
That was good.
I tried my best. All right, cool. We have a ding, ding, ding.
Dilemma.
Let us get into it. If my phone would like to unlock itself. Okay. Dear Renee and Courtney, I hope you're having...
Sorry, that felt so personal. Hello, dear Renee and Courtney.
Hello, somebody. I hope you're having a wonderful week. I started listening to your podcast this year and absolutely love it.
Welcome,
it's
babes.
Quickly become a staple. Thank you for doing what you're doing for all the sisters around the globe. You're more than welcome. Thanks,
babes.
My dilemma is I'm 23 years old and I'm trying to get my first entry-level job within the human rights sector, specifically to serve marginalized communities such as women, children, refugees, and IDP.
Mm.
What does IDP stand for?
IDP. International
Development Projects?
Development Projects maybe is what I would go for, yeah.
Okay, cool. I graduated last May, which is fast approaching. It's a bit of an oxymoron. And I haven't secured a job.
Yeah.
I had a lot of luck last year with interviews, but since 2024 has begun, I haven't gotten any.
Mm-hmm.
So I focused more on networking and personal development while still applying for jobs. Mm-hmm. I know that when it comes to my friends, I will always support them and be there for them to celebrate their ups and their downs.
Yeah.
That's just the person I am. However, I'm humiliated to admit this. While I've been working hard, just as hard as my friends, I won't say I've been working harder as we're all on our own journeys, but I've been putting in the work and I haven't seen results. Recently, all my friends have been getting jobs and internships, and I'm finding it hard to be happy for them because I get this selfish thought of, when is it going to be me? I've been trying my best to stay positive and learn patience, something I already struggle with, because everyone says what is meant for you will come to you. But I've been working so hard since graduation to do the work instead of just waiting, and right now I find myself asking, what more can I do? I already have a bad habit of trying to constantly improve myself to the point of self-deprecation, and I really don't want to go back to a dark place I just got out of. Do you have any advice for a sister who's trying to break into the workforce and trying to be there for her friends even though they're achieving what she's waiting for? Thank you for taking the time to read my dilemma. Thank you for creating a safe space where I can ask these questions and share my thoughts and feelings. Have a lovely week. I can't wait for the next drop.
That's so kind.
Wow,
that was so well mannered.
Thank you,
genuinely well written dilemma. Very. God bless you.
You can tell you're an intelligent girl.
I can tell you graduated.
You're intelligent.
You graduated. Congratulations.
But yeah, thank you for the self awareness and the transparency. Yeah. I think this is something that a lot of us can actually
relate to.
For and these are uncomfortable feelings that often we don't talk about. Yeah. You know, feelings of jealousy, comparison, impatience. So yeah, Miss Renee, what are your thoughts?
No, I absolutely love this dilemma because I feel like I'm speaking to myself at your particular stage.
Yes.
I went through this exact dilemma where, you know, sometimes you can go through a process, especially education or some certain life experiences, and think that life actually owes you something. And it does.
Jesus.
It actually does. No. Biggest
blessing. Life actually owes you something.
No. Because I think sometimes folks will be like, you know, you just got to keep going, put the work in, the universe will respond. And, you know, you have been doing all the right things.
Yeah.
And sometimes, especially as somebody I can very much relate to you in, that I have a passion for self-improvement and for self-development. Same. But sometimes you can't self-develop yourself into what you want.
Yeah.
Sometimes you actually do have to wait. And that's really frustrating, especially when you have done all the right things. You have carefully curated a life which, by all intents and purposes, you should be getting results, but you aren't. And it's so annoying, like really frustrating, especially
definitely the worst.
Listen, at that period of time where you've actually just graduated, you had this immense high, and now you're waiting months and months and months for something to give. And it's exacerbated by the fact that, of course, all of your friends, they're, you know, on their own journey and they're celebrating, but you too, you want to be celebrating because you've actually been putting the work in.
Facts.
So I think your feelings are very valid, first and foremost. You don't have to hide and be like, oh my God, like I shouldn't be feeling jealousy and comparison.
No.
These are normal emotions.
Very understandable
emotions.
Especially
with what you've been going through.
Yeah.
So don't beat yourself up for feeling that way. You're actually entitled to your emotions. What we now need to do is, how do we process these emotions, right? How do we continue to do work on ourselves that is not just self-deprecating, but actually intended to lift you up? And I think there is something to be said around having patience. Unfortunately, that is the reality of the game, the reality of, you know, wherever you're at. I mean, when I look at like global economies just across the board, it's very difficult to land a job in this environment.
The employment rate is crazy.
Plummeting crazy. Across the board. It's actually very, very difficult to break and get that first break into the workforce. And I do think that institutions need to actually do a better job at educating people as to how hard it actually is going to be.
Set more realistic expectations.
And I think it's exacerbated by the particular area or field that you want to get into. Anything related to international development, supporting communities, doing any kind of advocacy work is notoriously opaque.
Absolutely.
Notoriously difficult to get into because a lot of these things are propped up by nepotism. A lot of these things are propped up by
bureaucracy.
A lot of bureaucracy. Oh, the bureaucracy. listen. These institutions, I'm speaking directly to all of the institutions, the international development and aid organizations. Bureaucracy, I think their titles should just be bureaucracy. To get that first crack in is very, very hard. Yeah. And I also want to congratulate you on getting to the stage where you're actually having interviews, because there's actually, for every person that gets an interview, there's at least 60 or 70 people that did not even reach that phase. So you are doing things correctly. It's just the reality of the situation that the environment is not conducive to you getting first in on that job straight away. And I think it's living with that reality that it actually will take a little bit longer, and you may have to get a little bit creative to either land the role or the position that you want right now, or take a sidestep into that role. Absolutely. Right? So you want to work in international development, you want to work with marginalized communities. There are ways to do that without having to pursue that directly or only, right? Yeah. Think about the ways that you could potentially volunteer. And that's not my first port of call, by the way, because money have to make. No, let's be real. Because money have to make. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And as much as we talk about, you know, economy and supporting these communities, you need to support these communities by supporting yourself. You actually need to have a good quality of life able to, you know,
Be supportive.
How can I support you, Mita?
I need the development work.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, literally.
Need the development. I need the investment. So I think there's no shame. Volunteering is an option, but don't think that you are relegated solely to volunteering to have the impact that you seek to have on society. Also think about adjacent careers. So it may not be that you work straight away with a charitable enterprise or an international aid focused enterprise, but you can also work in other organizations that still have a very strong social mission. Yeah. So you could work in, for example, the start, if that is an interest of yours, you can work in the startup space. You can work as, you know, partnerships where you actually get an opportunity to really see how you can make integral partnerships within the role of a company, still having that impact, but just in a slightly different way. So I would definitely encourage you to actually get creative about the role that you want to land in the companies that you want to land to, because you're definitely not relegated to just working specifically with these bureaucratic institutions, right? So really think about, okay, I may not be able to get a direct way in right now, but how can I sidestep or kind of worm my way in? Or how can I still be having impact working at organizations or working with people that are just as passionate, that are still trying to have an impact on these particular communities? I think you'd be very, very surprised. And it was actually my experience where I really wanted to work with international aid organizations. I did all the right internships. I did all the right interviews and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't actually land a role, but actually ended up working with startup companies. I worked in technology as well, where I was still able to work with communities that were being targeted by the products or the services that we were creating. But I didn't necessarily get into international development until a little bit later into my career directly. So I definitely encourage you to think about how you can at least sidestep or still have that impact in other organizations. I would also say explore the myriad of opportunities of advocacy that it has to offer. You can be an advocate for any cause by just getting involved in some of these organizations, right? You can be, you know, on the board of governors of something. You can be part of like real advocacy groups. You can go to conversations, you can go to events. So beyond actually networking to meet people, you can actually network to be a part of the causes and be a part of that ecosystem that's actually driving real world change, really focusing in on your purpose and your impact in the work that you're doing, but not having to feel like you have to go through this sometimes quite seedy process of getting to know people to climb up the corporate ladder or climb up the international development ladder. So actually doing a lot more grassroots community work as well can be just as fulfilling alongside, you know, taking either a more corporate role or even going down the route of entrepreneurship, doing a lot of this community advocacy work can actually be a great supplement or in some cases break out into your main kind of squeeze. So I definitely explore that and think about the kind of community organizations that you can actually be at the forefront of without having to go through the bureaucratic process of applying.
Yeah, that's good.
And I think taking solace in the fact that you are actually in the beginning phases of your journey. I know it's really hard to hear. And sometimes in our minds, we can think that life has to be a linear progression. But I think taking solace in the fact that you're actually at the beginning of your career and you're actually at the beginning of your journey, and there's actually so much that is open to you, and not seeing these doors that are shutting as indicative of how your life is going to go, but actually just seeing this as maybe not this, not right now. It's all about framing. And it's all about like really finding solace in the fact that you're actually just starting up. Yes, everyone around you, and that's community bias, right? The people in your community, they're getting snapping up those jobs, but that's literally a snapshot of hundreds of thousands, millions of people that are in the same boat as you, that are going through the exact same thing as you, trying to figure out this thing between like purpose but also a meaningful career, but also trying to make money, but also trying to have impact. Like, take solace in the fact that this actually isn't a new dilemma. This is actually something that a lot of people are struggling with. Absolutely. And you've actually got so many things that are positive. You've got so many advantages. And as much as it is a waiting game, unfortunately, there is nothing that is in your way or nothing that should deter you from thinking that you don't deserve these things, number one, and that you won't eventually get them.
So good.
And in the waiting period, yes, of course, definitely celebrate your friends. Yes, you do have these feelings of jealousy, or you may be feeling a little bit inadequate right now, but these things don't have to be mutually exclusive from the fact that you're actually happy for your friends, right? It's about what emotions are you going to allow to rule you? Are you going to allow your jealousy to rule you? Are you going to allow your love and celebration for your friends to rule you? They can coexist, but it's about which one is going to take the center stage and which one we're going to deal with in the back. And as hard as it is, you know, sometimes you actually just need to like take a step back too. It's really difficult to be in environments where, you know, people are really succeeding and it feels like you're not succeeding. I think it's really important for you to take some space and time for yourself as well, so not constantly finding yourself in environments where you have to like celebrate people. Sometimes just take some time and be like, oh, okay, give me like a day to like wallow in my self-pity, because it's important, right? I'm mad, I'm not getting what I want. So let me like take my day to wallow in my self-pity, pick it up, celebrate my friends and keep on going. But take heart, sis, like we've been there.
This is many of us are still there. Honestly, so many people are still there. And I loved your response, and I agree with everything that you said. I think one, you have to look at the wider landscape of things, like in this economy with employment rates, unemployment rates, entering into industries like this, which are already so gatekept in the first place, is even more difficult. And like, I love that you validated these feelings. These feelings are very normal to feel. So many of us can relate to this, not just in the area of work, but everything else, every goal that we have in life. And so definitely, I love that you have acknowledged that this is what you feel. And I love what you said. It doesn't need to detract from your celebration of your friends. You can still celebrate your friends and still feel these feelings internally, because these feelings are not towards them. They are towards your own situation. And I think it's very hard, like you said, to be in environments where other people's successes sometimes remind you of your failures, but you are not a failure. You are going through what a lot of people are going through, and the resistance that you are feeling doesn't necessarily mean this will never be yours. It just means that now is not that time. And I do love what you emphasized about sidestepping into it. I think it's really important to be creative with your career curation, right? Like, you are building your career step by step, and you're in control of those building blocks. And so whilst you may not be getting into the jobs which you ideally want and think should be your entry level or entry jobs, you can always do other things like corporate social responsibility in companies. You can work in social enterprises. You can do something which is still around not just these subject matters but also these groups that you want to help. You can do things that are around, you know, social and economic empowerment. You can make sure that even corporations are having a good social impact. And I think being creative in the way you think about these positions and the skills that they will teach you that you will need in the future can help you broaden up the pool of what it is you're applying for at the moment. Like you said, you are actually doing really well sorry, you also said that you were doing really well with interviews last year, but obviously it didn't progress to you getting an offer. I think it would be good to review why that is, why it is that you've been applying to all of these things. You're getting to interview stage, but things keep falling through. And I think another point of feedback and review can be looking at what your friends have done, because your friends are not your competition. They can actually be a very productive resource to give you insight into what these companies and places that you're looking to work are actually looking for in people, in experience, in application, in interview. And so I definitely think sitting down with your friend and being like, yeah, we've done the party, but girl, I need you to help me review.
Hello.
What, this is what I'm sending people. Is it wrong? Can you send me a copy of your CV? Can I see how you applied? Like, what was your approach? I think having that in your mind helps you to reframe even the way you view your friends as them having something that you want and seem to not be able to have, and instead seeing them as somebody who have gone a step in front of you, who can actually turn back and show you how to also take that step in the best way. So your friends, if they are succeeding, it means God is moving in your neighborhood. He's moving around you. And if this is the community you've been able to build, then clearly there's also something about you which is very promising. So don't also see this as you being unworthy or unqualified. I think there could be something about their style that maybe is different to yours. So don't do this as an isolated endeavor where you're, you know, going about your interviews by yourself. If people have already succeeded in that area, ask them, how did they succeed? You know, they probably faced the challenges, and this is very much generalizing and not knowing the full context, but they probably experienced the same challenges you're facing, right? They're working in the same economy you are, trying to enter the same field that you are. So what did they do to succeed? Learn from their success, stand on those shoulders. And now also see them as people who have an inroads into that. If there are programs happening at their workplace, if there are events and conversations and engagements, which you can actually be a part of, they can make you aware of that so that you can be a part of those conversations and you can get into the rooms where you can meet some key stakeholders who could open opportunities for you. And that brings me to another point that I was thinking, like, you may need some mentors, like people who are in that space, who you let them know, like, this is a journey I'm trying to go on. I'm, you know, already very well qualified. I've graduated. I've got these grades. I've done this kind of experience work, but doors are not opening for me. And I really want guidance as to how I can build a career like yours. And I think people are always looking for people they can take under their wing. Or at the very least, they are happy to have a conversation with you about how you may need to sharpen yourself. But I think having conversations and getting people who actually have the power to make some kind of decisions could be a good way for you to get in to the spaces that you want to get into. So offer to help these people, offer to shadow them to events and meetings that they have, so that you're around, you're already entering into the spaces that you want to be. You may not be the one who was invited, but you can go in there as a servant, and that's fine. That's always a way to get access to the room. So I know you were saying about volunteer work, it can be so hard to accept that, like, we have to volunteer, and that's oftentimes free work in this economy. But if you can, like, work a part-time job, and that gives you resources to also volunteer some of your time to do some of the things you actually love, so you can build those experiences, build that network, do the groundwork, then sis, that's just a part of your story, you know, and it will only be for a season. And I love what you said about patience. Patience can be such a hard and bitter pill to swallow. Because you're thinking, but everyone else hasn't had to wait as long.
Everybody is living their best life.
Why am I waiting long? But you also don't know what God's trying to prepare you for and prepare for you. But at the same time, I think we have to be careful in thinking that in the grand scheme of things, these are really long periods of time, because they're not. You waiting a couple of months to get a job is actually not that long. And so, yeah, I think don't get all, what they call it, don't catastrophize. Catastrophize and think that this will be your situation forever. This is your situation for now, and it is just for now,
just for now.
But yeah, overall, broaden your options a bit in terms of what you're applying for. Ask your friends to really do a review and give you some feedback. Get some mentors who can get you in certain rooms. And girl, I hope it works out.
It will.
You seem like such an intelligent person. It will. And if anything, just pivot. a little bit, and then you, I'm telling you, your route will be reoriented back into this.
100%.
There are so many ways to skin a cat. Like, you're so many ways to skin a cat. You'll find your way back into this essentially. But yeah, thank you. Sure. Thank you for your dilemma. Mm-hmm. And we're praying everything really, really goes well.
Amen
for you. If you haven't already read the chapter in our book on comparison, jealousy and envy, then I highly recommend that you do. Because we talk about feelings like this a lot, because they are human feelings.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's the way we process those feelings and also what they provoke us to do that actually matters.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, sis. Well.
Wow.
Praying for all the girlies to get their ideal jobs, man.
Amen, man. It's not easy in this economy, bruv. At all.
But it doesn't mean what's for you won't come to you.
Hallelujah.
But also, even on that phrase, what's for you will come to you. Not always.
Thank
like
you. Yeah.
Let's not go. Always Let's you like oftentimes yeah. you actually have to fight for what it is you want. And so this is when you really get to the drawing board and think, how am I gonna find myself in these
Absolutely
rooms?
Right.
And if I try option A and it doesn't work, we're going to B and we're gonna do it all the way to Z. Like, keep trying,
honestly.
Keep being, if this is where you believe you are meant to be, keep trying and keep pressing. Yeah. You have to contend for these things. I'm
you
so
really
sorry.
Do. No, honestly, because this that kind of thinking can really provoke laziness, but also can provoke,
absolutely,
what's the word for it?
Entitlement.
Yeah.
Entitlement.
Real entitlement.
Also, sorry, girls, I'm sick again.
Yeah. Lord, can we just intercede quickly?
The enemies are working, but you're not succeeding, because this time my throat and my chest are fine.
That's right, baby.
I've just got the sniffles.
Yeah, that's right. Sniffle. How about that? Standing on business.
Nah, guys, doctors in the room, arise. Please. What is wrong with me? It's my third sickness of the year.
Immune system.
I'm telling you.
What is attacking Courtney?
I've been telling you, there's something going on. And if it wasn't for my fear of going to the GP, I would have figured it out by now.
I'm screaming.
Yeah.
General practitioners, arise, absolutely, and shine, but also be nicer. Some of you guys are not nice. No.
It's the pressure of the NHS, isn't it?
Especially the receptionists. There needs to be,
some development work in that
The L&D budget there has been slashed.
How about that?
Good
learning
gosh.
And development. But yeah, sorry, you were saying about entitlement, and I can't.
Yeah, no, I do think that phrase can provoke a lot of entitlement and just a lot of like lack of fighting. Because what is for you will always be for you, but sometimes you can get in the way of your own blessings.
Absolutely. And just because it's been assigned to you doesn't mean you actually possess it.
Yeah.
You know, there can be stuff in a closet, right, that has Renee's name on it. If Renee doesn't go to the closet and pick it up and get the right keys to access it, it's not going to be, it's yours. Yeah. No one can rob it.
That.
No one's denying that. But will you lay hold of it is the real question.
The real question.
You know? So yeah, girls, let's sharpen ourselves up. But I also want to balance that with what you said about self-deprecation. This isn't about like, oh, I'm not good enough, woe is me.
No,
it's just that plan A has not worked. Okay, cool, plan B,
let's go.
The new route,
let's move.
So it's more so about a route which is external to you, mm-hmm, and less so about whether you yourself are qualified, because you clearly are.
Yeah. It makes me think of like, you know, when you're driving, for the drivers amongst us, when you're driving along a particular route and you find that the road is blocked, the issue is not with the car, it's the route.
Exactly.
You go back it up and take a different one.
Rerouting, that's what it is. So don't take this personally.
Yeah.
It's just going to take you a little longer to get there.
Yeah.
But it'll be good when you get there, though.
And you'll have a hell of a story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the testimony is often like worth the little going
trials
back and forth,
and
the trials, exactly. Wow. Anyways, we're definitely nearly 30 minutes into the episode. Child, so
we got a lot. Listen,
sis, we hope that helped you. And if you ever want to send us a dilemma, actually, you can send us yours to dilemmas at twomysisters.com, and we will get round to that.
Yay!
Yeah. Some of you guys are not observing the word limit. I
not
just want you
all.
To know you're making the job hard for yourself.
We cannot get around to it. If you're sending paragraphs,
guys,
whilst we empathize,
guys,
we don't.
That
read.
Is a prayer request.
We can't read.
Like, it's a lot. It's a lot. So if you just condense it a little bit, even if you sent us your dilemma already and you're like, oh, it's a bit long, just send us a follow-up. Condense it for us. ChatGPT is there, even if you're struggling.
That's a good
condense
idea.
Condense it, and I guarantee you we'll get around to it.
We'll get it.
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as we see a short,
that's simple as, simple as. So that's just a little cheat code for you. Anywho's, divorce, divorce. So
that's segue. Anyway, divorce.
Divorce, divorce. So just some disclaimers at this point. Certain themes will probably come up, such as domestic violence, abuse, even divorce. If that is triggering for you, then proceed with caution. Please take care of yourself. We have so many episodes that you can go and listen to instead. You can get the cliff notes of this in the comments, I'm sure. Don't put yourself through anything, because this video in itself was triggering. After that trigger warning, I do think it would be good to just even talk about that. Overall thoughts about this piece of content that was gifted to the internet.
Gifted. It's more like poisoned. I felt poisoned.
We definitely shared the similar exacerbated disappointment and infuriation. But please unpack your feelings towards this video.
Frustrated to the absolute max. And you know what? For context, guys, Courtney sent this video to me. She's like, check it out. I want to see what you think. And the thing is, I had watched a segment of this conversation before, but due to frustration, I closed it and said, you know what? My mental well-being, happiness, literally, and just general, like, everything is more important than this. So when she sent that video, I said, this one again. Let me at least get through to the end of it. And it was a very difficult watch for me, Courtney. It was a really, really difficult watch. Number one, I think the way the conversation was conducted and the way that people comport themselves generally online, you know, we've been speaking about learning and development and the importance of comporting yourself well. I think my biggest frustration with lots of conversations on the internet is many people engage in conversations to speak but not to listen. And it just felt like an exercise as to ascertain who is right and not trying to understand where is the middle ground in this conversation, because I think that there were valid points that were actually made by both sides. I get what people were trying to say, but the way that they were saying it was so off-putting that I didn't even want to hear what they were saying. I did not want to hear. And I think the way that many of them invalidated the real life lived experiences of people that have been divorced, people that have been victims of excessive abuse. One of the aunties was talking about how her husband beat her multiple times to the point of being in multiple comas. And you're out here with your fake American accent telling me, now just wait a minute. Hold on. Wait a minute. Like, no disrespect, ma'am. That's the, you know what?
Firstly, there were two people in particular.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Okay, so anyway, there are the two aunties that were there. And I want to be respectful because these people could definitely be my mom.
100%.
There was the auntie that was pro-divorce and the auntie that was like pro-marriage, you know? you're staying with that man.
I must stay with my husband.
Do you get what I mean? She even said if her husband sexually abused her child, she would stay with him. But of course, there would be separation. Anyway, we'll come to that.
We'll come around in a second. We'll come around.
So the man sitting next to the auntie who was pro-divorce, who was like, you know, me and my wife, we've only been married for 3 years. In those 3 years, we have separated countless times. He even said countless times. And I thought, are you proud of yourself?
And he was like, oh, but you know, when I went to go and see my child whilst we were separated.
So you were even outside of the house in just 3 years of marriage, honeymoon period. Now, obviously, we have not been married before. We don't know the child's that come in the beginning. But for you to say you've been separated countless times, sir. And then you're here telling people where you should have done the, you know, CRB checks before, if you saw the behavior. Did they identify the toxic behavior in you and your partner? Also, when he was talking initially, I thought he was gay. Not from the way he was talking, from the things that he was saying. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So like, you know, like diversity. Yeah. And then he said that and I was like, Anyway.
And it makes sense. It makes sense.
But my thing is like, I completely agree. Sorry, the second person who I disliked, the other guy sitting on the far, the youngest of them. Now, Mr. Alvin, I don't know what you've been watching, but you need to close your laptop.
You know what he's been reading? The Forbes list. The Forbes list on divorce, as he kept on quoting.
He's not serious. He's not serious. And I think we need to be careful with these sweeping generalizations on either side, right? In regards to the effects of divorce. You remember when the auntie who was pro, anti-divorce, let's say.
Yeah, yeah.
was talking about, oh, I don't know why people are here defending divorce. Maybe they come from broken homes. And then they switched to the clips where the guy was like, my parents have been married my whole life. You know, I've come from a very happy family. And it was just like, these are the assumptions that people need to be careful of, which is that people cannot understand why divorce would be necessary or in some cases life saving, as was with one of these, the people in the debate. People can understand that without actually having lived that experience, and the same being true for her. And I think her specific case, the auntie that was anti-divorce, was quite interesting because she had also been a victim of domestic violence. And I think that I wanted to then touch on the kind of cultural views of that, because you had multiple generations represented in that conversation. From what's the generation before millennials? Baby boomers. Baby boomers to millennials to Gen Z.
Yeah.
I want to say Alvin is Gen Z. There's no way you are older than that, sir. We had multiple generations represented in that. And I do think that context is important to frame how some of these opinions can be and exist and also be propagated, right?
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on the cultural influence of the views that some people have on divorce?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. And I think it was very apparent in the views that were put forward.
Absolutely.
Right? The idea, we often talk about patriarchy in conversation on this podcast, but the way that patriarchy is enshrined within marriages is a very big cultural element as to how people are engaging, right? So you've got, and it's interesting because I love the comparison of the two aunties. And I think that was a very moving and touching representation of how sometimes when patriarchy is so enshrined in marriages, it does very little to protect women, both inside marriages, but also outside of marriages, right?
That's so good.
So you've got auntie who has decided to stay. She's been abused by her husband, or she has experienced some very traumatic experiences as a result of being married to this man. But because of the way she believes that marriage is so integral to the way that we as women function and integral as an institution to gain access to certain things, she really believed in saving that marriage above all. But what was also very interesting about the juxtaposition with the other auntie that had left, she still also had that mindset to an extent because she decided to endure before leaving, right? She had mentioned, look, I'm not a small babe. I've been married for 25 years before I made the decision. I got
married when I was 19.
And then also the way they spoke to her after that.
Everybody deserved a dirty slap. Everybody deserved a dirty slap for the way they spoke to that woman. I thought somebody that could be your mother.
And I think what is very interesting is the cultural depiction of marriage and what it does, right? And I was even noting down furiously just why I was so frustrated and angry about both of their experiences. And I think it's the incapacity of society to protect women within the institution of marriage. The fact that marriage has been used time and time again, not just in their generation, but continues to be used in our generation as a weapon to control women, as a weapon to manipulate women into thinking that their value is so wrapped up and enshrined in nothing but marriage, in nothing but servitude, in nothing but providing for this man.
Yeah.
To think about the fact that for a lot of women, even the fact that they got married quite young, right? For a lot of women, their life or their life's purpose revolved around them being a mother or a wife or, you know, growing up to be a wife. And it really got me thinking, to what extent are men raised to be husbands?
And this is one of the biggest red flags that came from this conversation for me. This idea that the entire success of a marriage rests on the shoulders of the woman.
Of a woman.
And that is not the case. You know, people were talking about how like, would you break up your whole family just because he beat you, just because he did this? And it's like, why is it that my final decision to pursue a divorce is seen as the breaking of the family not his display of violence? And of course, we're using very heteronormative terms, you know, you can adjust this to any other context within relationship dynamics. But like, why is it seen that somebody's perpetuation of violence or abusive behavior or genuinely posing a threat to a family is not seen as them breaking up the family, right? Why is the adultery not seen as the breaking point? Why is the divorce seen as the breaking point? And I definitely think it's that misogynistic point of view that the success of society wholly rests on the behavior of a woman. And then that absolves men of the responsibility of being caretakers of their entire family, being good men, being safe, right? And creating safe environments. And then society then becomes abdicated of their responsibility of teaching these men to also be caregivers, provide safe environments for women and children and those around them, to be honest. And we see it in the way that masculinity has been handed down generationally, and how it's been taught to men, both consciously and subconsciously. It seems like safety and the safeguarding of people around them is not an integral part of how they are trained to be men. Whereas with women, like you're saying, we're trained to be caretakers. We're trained to be the saving grace of our homes. And so we are taught these very important virtues, which can often be abused, like endurance and patience and long suffering and being strong. And this kind of abuse of our strength is what then leads to society being like, you should have been more woman, instead of teaching men. You have a perverted definition of masculinity.
Extremely perverted.
Yeah.
And the failure of society, both within marriage, but also outside of marriage, right? Damned if you do and damned if you don't. There's not enough accountability to ensure that men are caregivers. Yeah. They are providers within the institution of marriage.
Yeah.
And yet when you leave that institution of marriage, there's not enough support outside or externally to ensure that women and children are actually kept safe.
Yeah.
And I also hated the fact that they were really talking about divorce in the extremities of a lot of these situations, right? So what would you do if your husband was doing this? Or what would you do if your husband was abusing you? And I think there was a middle ground or a conversation to be had around, as you were saying, the responsibility that is often given to women to make a relationship thrive and survive, right? Of course, divorce is an option, but actually having conversations around what does it take for a marriage to be happy when both parties have that responsibility. Yeah. So beyond being the provider, beyond making sure that there's a roof over your head, this tasking of women to endure abuse, even in the less extreme cases, without holding men accountable as to how they are causing problems and issues within their relationships. Massive issue.
Huge.
Massive issue.
And also the lack of commitment to the community care, right? Which is, you guys all have all of these opinions about, oh, this person's being abused, this is what they should do. This person's going through this, this is what they should do. But have you actually thought about what it looks like to participate in the healing of that family or the healing of that marriage? Mm-hmm. And I know that things like marriage counseling came up a few times, religion came up a lot as well. And I think religion is a part of the cultural influence of this entire conversation, which we definitely need to touch on. But I think what these things primarily are community bases for people. They are meant to be resources of support for them to navigate situations like this, right? Where people clearly have lost their right minds or things are just not going well.
Lost their goddamn
mind. And I think what they didn't explore and what they didn't display, obviously it's a chopped up video and all of that, and what sometimes society lacks to display when they are having these conversations is, what is your commitment to the care of this family? What is your commitment to its restoration, or at least to the health of the individuals, right? And I find that people often say, like, you shouldn't leave or you should leave, and they don't think about what it will take to actually be a part of these people's healing journey.
Yeah.
So, like, what does it look like for a woman who has been abused to still have a space where she can talk about her abuse, but also find a safe place where she's not going to be riddled with shame if she has chosen to leave or if she's chosen to stay, which is the uncomfortable thing which a lot of us who may be on the more liberal side also don't want to talk about, which is, if you choose to stay in an abusive relationship, is there also places of safety for you to go to seek some kind of help? And I find that women are often framed as posing a threat to their family by breaking it up, when actually what they're trying to do is, like you said, survive, right? I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to protect myself. I'm trying to also protect my children. And to some degree, I'm trying to protect my husband from himself, because me staying in a situation where this man is going to catch a case, because he will catch a case, is also not protective for him either. So I think it's also seeing separation or even sometimes divorce as a safeguarding of all these, not even sometimes, a lot of times, seeing it as a safeguarding for individuals. What are your thoughts on the kind of religious influence of things? Because we are women of faith, you know, we are Christians, and so many of the sisterhood are of Abrahamic faith as well as just spirituality, you know?
Yeah.
And we're coming from not only cultures which uphold marriage so highly, but also religions which uphold marriage so highly. So What do you think about the intersection of those two?
Yeah, I think what the conversation displayed is a long-standing habit of institutions, cultures, societies abusing religious texts and abusing the institution of religion to enforce patriarchal views or to enforce certain things that they agree with or certain world orders that they benefit from, right? And I think this idea of you cannot divorce no matter what, marriage as an institution, I think has been so perverted that because for a lot of people, marriage has been turned into an idol. And because it's very easy for you to justify why marriage is important, a lot of people have idolized it and not realized it. And it's become, I think, especially for the like baby boomer generation, and I think less so for our generation, but it's still there, marriage relationships are still idols within a lot of our culture because that is the first institution that a lot of people that we have as a community, right? And I think it becomes very difficult to extract yourself from an abusive situation when religion has been used to validate that situation, right? So this whole idea of like marriage is till death do us part, or the popular phrases and bits and pieces that we use that have been taken from the Bible, or this idea of, you know, when you leave your family to become one with somebody else, you know, God is pleased, etc. I do think that religion for a long time has been used, especially against women, to validate why they should endure in marriages, right? So this whole idea that divorce is displeasing to God, which is true. However, we often skate over the fact that there are certain conditions under which divorce is actually necessary. And I think it also highlights a big problem around like this idea of like biblical eisegesis versus exegesis. Taking certain bits of the Bible, so taking certain bits of our religion that are self-serving or serving to exactly fit the worldview, fit the cultural view in order to enforce power, in order to subvert what God intended, in order to make people feel powerless. And I feel that especially around patriarchy, religion has been used to enforce patriarchy in a lot of these instances. And I think it's a real shame because not only has it been used as to kind of enforce misogyny, but it has also been used to kind of make those that have been victims of abuse feel guilty if they now start to explore what they think is outside of their religion, right? And I think it was very apparent in the case of the two aunties, for example, right? So, you know, the Bible says that it's really bad for you to like leave your... And it was interesting because it was actually the lawyer. So in the conversation, there was one guy who was actually a practicing lawyer. And he was like, some of the things that you guys are saying are actually extremely incorrect. It's actually problematic.
I loved his presence. I think it was necessary.
So necessary. But I thought what was interesting about him was he also had biblical knowledge, right? Yes. There was points in the conversation where he was like, whilst divorce is bad, if you were to read the Bible, you would see that divorce is actually allowed and enabled on the grounds of circumstances. So I think it can be quite dangerous because not only does it cause victims to blame themselves, not only does it cause massive subversions in power, but it also causes massive problems with people and their relationship and the way that they see God, right? Especially for Christians, you start to feel, you start to ask questions like, God, are you the one that is enabling me to stay in these abusive environments? Is there no get out of jail card?
Do I deserve this? For me?
Exactly. Do I deserve this? Do you love me? And if you did love me, why are you allowing me to go through this? So I do think that it can be quite dangerous because it subverts, it causes a lot of people that find themselves in abusive circumstances to feel like there's no get out, especially because we lack, as you were saying, the presence of community care. For all intents and purposes, there's been so many situations and there's been so many situations where because of the, how do I phrase this in a way that's non-problematic? Trying to be so non-problematic, but it's funny because I saw a comment on one of our like previous episodes where somebody had said, sometimes African/immigrants, we need to divorce ourselves from the view, the way that religion has taken a grip on of us to the point that we were unable to actually show love to other people. And I feel that sometimes...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Because of the way that religion has been
weaponized?
Yeah, because of the way that religion has been weaponized in culture, we actually lack the capability to show love.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
So yeah, it's almost as though the institution of religion has actually prevented us from actually showing the care and love to a lot of these people that are going through these extremely tough times within their marriage. Yeah. And I think we would do well to really focus on our like personal relationships with God, personal relationships and understanding of the Bible before we just start parroting certain phrases that have been culturally reinforced as opposed to empowered by our understanding of the Holy Spirit and also empowered by our understanding of God in the Bible in its totality.
Right. Okay. There's a lot to unpack with that. Yeah. And I completely agree with you and I hear where you're coming from. I do think from a religious standpoint and from a Christian standpoint, let's be specific to the experience we know. God has an opinion on divorce and we can't deny it. God has an opinion on divorce. And I love that you brought up idolatry because I think that's one of the traps that makes us lose the sanctity and the seriousness of what marriage actually is, especially when you feel like people need to rush themselves into marriage. You may not really consider that this is to some degree a once you're in, you're in, right? And it's going to come with a lot of challenges, hopefully not to the extremes of divorce, but it's going to come with a lot of challenges which you will have to endure through. Like love, one of the definitions of it is endurance and patience, right? I do think that sometimes because of the way marriage has been framed, we don't deep that enough, right? How serious of a commitment that actually is. And I do think even though it was on the anti-divorce side, what they were highlighting about how divorce to some degree has been trivialized and normalized to the point where it is just, I don't like that, I'm getting a divorce. Not to say that divorce is ever an easy decision for anyone to make. And there's that comment saying no one ever enters a marriage wanting to get divorced, right? However, I do think because there is that, well, we can get divorced and it's an option that we entertain quite often and is normalized in our society, particularly in the West, right? It's like, have you really considered the severity of the decision and the commitment that you're going to make? Because one thing that was highlighted in that video was marriage is an oath. You actually have to keep your oath to someone. It is a covenant. And so that has to be dealt with such a degree of sobriety. And I love that that lady mentioned her experience of you got married at 19 and whilst it was delivered very poorly, I do think what people said around that was far too young to get married was definitely that it had some point to it. It was like, actually, did people make it clear to you what was like happening and what you're committing yourself to? And also as a young woman, as a modern woman, have you also been given the freedom to really make the decision for yourself? Or is there so much cultural and societal pressure that you feel like you just have to enter into this regardless, right? And I do think that I love what you said about sometimes with the way that religion is weaponized, we do not assess how much we care for people. But I don't think you have to detach yourself from religion in order to learn how to care for people more. Because a core tenet of our faith is love your neighbor, right? So I think a lot of us also need to investigate what the manifestation of loving your neighbor actually looks like. And I think above our upholding of religiosity and laws and stuff like that, I think we need to really think about how much we love justice as well. Because I think sometimes that's where religion, and oftentimes that's where religion goes wrong. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. no, it should be like this. It should be like that because the text says so. And I love that you mentioned eisegesis versus exegesis, because oftentimes when you put these things into context, that's actually not what the text is saying. Yeah, yeah. But okay. But actually, God is also a God of justice. Yeah. And so God actually cares that this person is being abused. God cares that this power is being abused and misused. Yeah. God cares that, you know, there's that scriptural basis that says, in the case of adultery, your marriage ended when that man or that person decided to sleep with somebody else. Do you get what I mean? Not necessarily the divorce, whilst it also does say that God hates divorce. So there are some cases where divorce is allowed, but also what the Bible says is once you get divorced, you're not getting remarried. Yeah, not. And I think that's what I'm saying also about the severity of of divorce and separation. It's not that it's not allowed. I think we also do need to explore, though, once it happens, honoring God, and this is where your personal relationship with God comes from, honoring God is what determines your next step, right? And if your biblical text in our case says, if your husband's still alive, you're not getting remarried, do you also accept that, right? And I think for a lot of women, and a lot of people, whilst that is a very tough pill to swallow, I do think a lot of people do take that kind of approach of, okay, I'm not doing this again, you know? And I think it's uncomfortable and it's sad. And this is where the community care really comes in, and our love for justice, but also our love for people really takes play. Because if that is a decision you have made, it still takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah.
And if you're, in our case, your husband is not in that picture, do you have other supporters around you? And this is why the whole shame element is so ungodly and so demonic, because it gives it a, it makes us rob people of the support they actually really need and that God wants them to actually have, right? Like, you are not some kind of leper because you've gotten a divorce, or you're not some kind of leper because you've been a victim of abuse, or you've done something to try and protect your family. Or even if you have just made the choice, I want to get a divorce, no matter what the conditions were, you should have people around you who care enough about your well-being as well to make sure that that decision is measured, that decision is counseled, but also that that decision is respected and you still are able to participate in a community who can keep you safe and make sure that your well-being is prioritized, whether your husband is alive or not, in jail or not, whatever it may be. And so I do think that that's where, for me, the religious aspect gets perverted. A lack of care for other people, but also a picking and choosing of what we apply and what we don't. And I love what you said, like, religion, especially Abrahamic faiths, have been, you know, so linked to patriarchy, right? They are patriarchal religions, and patriarchy doesn't necessarily have to be a negative word. However, in the way that human beings have applied it in their own selfishness, has been so misused. And I know that God is unhappy with it, right? And so many people have to answer for that. So I think it's also learning the nature of God, not just through the lens of men's behavior. Just because God is a father doesn't mean he acts like your father. Just because God is, you know, often characterized as a man, he came in the form of a man. It's even Holy Week, Happy Easter. Like, just because he came, Happy Easter, y'all.
He has risen.
But even that, like, the resurrection, let me give you our little Sunday sermon.
Hello.
The resurrection proves that men's hearts can actually be transformed, right? We can actually die to our old ways and be resurrected in a new way. As well as God's love for us and the fact that he so graciously empowers us to go through that that journey. I think more needs to be done to for us to be reminded of how much God hates sin, and that divorce is not the only sin. Divorce is oftentimes, I wouldn't even say it's a sin, it's something that displeases God, but, like, divorce is often the last thing of a sequence of sin, often on the other person's side. And so if we're not careful to really pinpoint that, the way you talk to your family, the way you act towards your family, the way you act towards your spouse is sinful in nature. Have we done enough to demonize that behavior? We have not. Exactly. So that's why I'm saying the picking and choosing, because divorce is a very easy one to go to, but we don't do enough as a religious community to really sit down and be like, yo, the way, because we often treat it as like, oh, slap on the wrist, don't hit her again. Do you think that's going to change somebody who's punching their wife in the face?
Got to stow that bad a little bit, just a little bit, just couple.
And that's what I'm saying, we need to see more examples of that, like when people are also publicly criticized for their behavior, their bad behavior, but also are they also being taken through a journey to allow them to transform?
Yeah.
Because those people can, that redemption is free for everybody. You can be redeemed now. You could also be redeemed in jail.
Yeah. Sometimes you need to go to jail first. And
thank you very much. That's actually a part of the rehabilitation yeah. process. You know what I mean? Your soul, your spirit has been redeemed, but you, right now, you need to be transformed.
But it's even
correctional
that, right?
facilities.
Hello, there needs to be consequences for your actions.
And that brings me to another part of this conversation, mm-hmm. which is something that our favorite guy, the lawyer, yeah, actually mentioned, which is there is the law. There is obviously there's prison, there's jail, there's the courthouse, yeah, there's the police and
In
all
the
of that.
In the older days, there was the Highgate Block.
And I love justice. Yeah. Being stoned and all of that stuff. But you know what? Women were also victims, so let's not even bring it back.
Hello.
There's all of this judiciary process.
Right.
However, in a country like Nigeria, and also with cases like this, which are seen as private matters, there is a lack of trust for the judiciary system.
Right.
And so how do you think the law kind of interplays into all of this?
Ooh, that is a really good question.
I try my best, man.
Yeah, you're really doing interrogative.
It's not an interrogation.
No, not an interrogation. You ask the right questions. You're a deep analytical thinker, as they say in all of those, conversations and whatnot. And I love it.
It's an investigation. It's investigative.
Yeah, we have to. Child, you guys are listening to this on Easter Sunday as well as April Fool's Day is coming, and there's some tomfoolery you need to address.
April Fool's being after Easter, because Jesus actually pulled the biggest prank. He said, "You thought I was dead? Ha! Aww. April Fool's!"
Jesus coming out of the
April Fool's.
Ew. Y'all thought I was gone.
He is risen, honey.
Coming like a rapper that's made a comeback. Get out of here. And sorry, when you were speaking about the resurrection, I was thinking of that song. The resurrected one is resurrecting me. In your name I come alive to declare your victory. The resurrected one is resurrecting me.
A banger.
Absolutely true.
That will make the whole church pop off.
And you know when I've derailed the conversation. You know the churches where you wear the ripped jeans and you've got the iced coffee and it's like the lights are just banging and you want to give it
But
everything.
Have we actually let the resurrected king resurrect us? No. Because some of us are acting like we're still in our old fleshly damn ways.
Some of us are in the damn Pharisees camp.
Gosh.
But yeah. The interaction of the law and divorce and weddings and all that kind
the
of
legal
stuff.
System.
I think it's very, I like that you asked that question because I think that is whilst it is in tandem with how we view like society alongside religion. Mm-hmm. It is something that's actually quite separate. And I think
Where's my tissue?
Where did it go?
Oh, it's here. Sorry. Sorry, I'm so sorry. Because one thing I'm not going to be doing is talk about a serious topic and my nose is not
taking it. Can you imagine? Because that's how they'll get you.
100%.
So you don't know what you're talking about. Your nose is dripping.
Talking about advocacy for gender-based violence. So you got to snap.
That's how they get you. That's how they derail the conversation. But no, I think it's very important to talk about the legal apparatus. And I'm so glad they have
apparatus. Come on.
Oh my God.
Come on.
Call me verbose or whatever. I think it is really important to talk about the legal apparatus, but also the cultural differences and the legal differences that we have, right?
Yes.
And I think it's wonderful that we also qualified that we are speaking from a Western perspective versus a perspective of the global south. I really hate that terminology.
Terrible,
well.
Actually.
The connotations,
but all of it,
so
all of it
bad.
Is bad. All of it, is
everything
bad.
Is
third
bad.
World, global south. The East? No.
Stop it. As if the West is going towards the sun. Man, it's going towards something hot. I don't know if it's the sun.
And also, there are a whole chunk of countries in the middle they like exclude
they
from
just
the
said,
West.
Yeah, forget about you guys. Yes. You're not interesting. And the cultural differences. And I love that you highlighted the fact that in places like Nigeria, because of the long established legacy of corruption, there is a fear that these private matters will not be taken seriously. But what I do really appreciate about the lawyer is the fact that he said just because there is a cultural sentiment or a societal sentiment that the law doesn't uphold, you still need to test it. Because there were certain grounds. And I think it was very sobering when he mentioned about the process of divorce, because I think going through that process for a lot of people highlights just how severe they must have gotten to actually decide on doing divorce, right? I think the distinction, when I think of someone like Alvin, who was talking about, oh, people get divorced all the time. And then the lawyer said, actually, no, especially in Nigeria.
I love the way he said, hold on, what are you saying?
Let me finish what I'm saying. I think there is a perception that divorce is normalized,
yes,
that I think is frequented in some of these places. But the reality is, actually, divorce isn't as common as people think it is. And when you do pursue divorce, because of the severity of it from a legal standpoint, oftentimes it's the most severe cases that we should be talking about or having conversations about. So actually, when Mr. Alvin was talking about, you know, it's irrelevant for us to be talking about domestic abuse and sexual abuse, because according to the Forbes list, this is like 7 foot 8.
Why is that your source?
And that's what the lawyer said to him. I was like, sir, you are in Nigeria. You are in Nigeria. You can't walk down to the legal courthouses and say, I want to divorce my wife. They'll even flog you.
Literally.
Like, be for real.
For real.
So I think it was actually very important to highlight that there are cultural differences, societal differences, national differences when we are talking about divorce. And this whole idea of normalizing divorce, well, actually, some of us are having very privileged conversations where divorce and the mechanism going through the process of divorce is relatively easy to access.
Yes.
Whereas in places like Nigeria or in other places where divorce is not as legally easy to obtain, or you have to go through considerable processes and mechanisms in order to get your freedom. Yeah. Actually, the extremities that we often think about in terms of like domestic violence and stuff like that are actually the key issues. Yeah. And divorce should be considered as an apparatus because it's so hard to get. People are not sitting down and saying, oh, you know,
just sent a cheeky email. I want to end my marriage.
People are not here. This even this idea of like, oh, you know, people are so fickle these days.
Yeah.
In your context, in Nigeria, no, they're not. Yeah. It's difficult to obtain divorce in these places. So the conversation, the argument that, you know, people are just so fickle these days, how about we have conversations about the first of all, the distinctions between who can actually obtain a divorce or not?
Yeah.
How about we talk about the disparity even in material resources? Because I was thinking about that too. A lot of women, especially in countries like Nigeria, they get married. Obviously, there's, you love me, all that kind of stuff. But there is still status and wealth and material advantages that are attached to being married.
Yeah, and a lot
of exactly.
It's life-saving.
It's life-saving. Yeah. So it's not as easy as a conversation of, oh, we lack communication, so I'm going to get a divorce. Oftentimes, a lot of people pursue divorce as a last resort.
Absolutely.
And a lot of women are trapped within these situations because materially they are better off inside these marriages. However, I love the fact that they were, you know, bringing up the conversation around like, what are the extremities in which divorce actually makes sense? This is where the anti-divorce folks really fell down for me, in terms of, we often equate people that come as a product of, you know, failed marriages or divorce marriages as coming from a broken family. Brokenness can exist within marriages.
In marriage. Oftentimes that is where it exists.
Jeez.
Right? There are a lot of, and that's why I said, I love when the lady was like, oh, he probably comes from a broken home. And he was like, no, I come from a very,
very happy home.
Happy home. I have a very happy family. But I have seen my cousins literally beg their parents to get divorced. And there are actually many children. Okay, maybe she's right in that it's not the very, very young ones, you know, but there are many children. I have personal experience of this.
Same.
Who literally tell their parents,
please,
you need to separate.
Stop.
We want you to separate because it's actually better for all of us if you two are not together. The household has got to that much of a toxic state that you two being separated is actually holding us together. Do you get what I mean? I think when people make that assumption, oftentimes, yes, there is a lot of research out there to suggest how divorce negatively impacts children.
True.
But then there's also an equal amount of resources and research out there to just suggest how the viewing of domestic violence, having a hostile environment in your home, also negatively impacts children, their trajectory and their outcomes when they grow into adulthood. How many of us are in therapy unpacking these negative things which we saw, right? Our parents may have been married by status, but the viewing of what happened in the home, or even their treatment of each other, or the lack of reconciliation and peace, is what actually disrupted us. It wasn't the divorce itself. It was all the things that probably led up to it. Do you get what I mean? And so I think we need to also be careful about that. The weaponizing of that whole, you come from a broken home.
Oh, because often it's
terrible. It's actually terrible. And it's like, the brokenness wasn't in the separation of the couple. It was in the nonsense behavior.
Oh.
That's actually what caused the brokenness in the home. And so, like you said, there are a lot of people who are married, their parents are still married, but they're still coming from a broken home.
Oh.
Because your home is dysfunctional. When you come from a dysfunctional family, I'm so sorry, you're coming from a broken home. Whether they have a marital status, live in the same, fact, you come from a dysfunctional family, you're coming from a broken home.
You might even be coming from a two single parent household.
Facts.
You are coming from
facts.
You think that just because legally you're married, you are somehow entitled to a happy home.
It doesn't solve things. That's the thing about like the marital status. Yeah. It doesn't solve things. And I love how the lawyer guy, I can't remember his name, but he mentioned that like the judge is gonna ask you, is this irreconcilable, right? And I think a lot of us need to become more invested in reconciliation.
Yeah.
And also, I'm sure that the legal system gives, like he even said, they send you away to try and reconcile. Like there is that room to try and make this better. But when we are living in homes, even though the marital status is still intact, so to speak, where there is no reconciliation, that's what fosters the brokenness in the people, in the home.
Yeah.
And I also think we... back to this community care point, we also need to do more to support children who are coming from such places.
Yeah, 100%.
Because like that lady did mention this, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna give you that one, where it's like the stigma that is attached to coming from a quote-unquote broken home is actually what a lot of people are scared of. And actually, if we all did our part to play that village in raising children and to see them as literal fallout from a very unfortunate situation, we wouldn't be throwing that label around so we wouldn't be weaponizing that label as much, basically. And I just thought it was so upsetting as somebody who does come from a broken home, quote unquote, even though I hate that term in general. It was very upsetting because I definitely grew up hearing that, right? Like I grew up seeing a lot of domestic violence in multiple people in my family.
It's
one of the reasons why like I think this kind of work is so important. That will bring me on to my next point. Like, I think this kind of work is so important, why I think community is so important. But one of the biggest reasons I heard was, I don't want my children to come from a broken home. However, the dysfunction and the pain was actually coming from, like I just said, seeing the violence, right?
Exactly.
Seeing the abuse, hearing the hostility, hearing the pain and the sobs, having to see the police come over so many different times. And I think we need to be careful about throwing these blanket statements over childhood experiences without really asking the children how they feel as well. Because statistics can say one thing, but lived experience can sometimes say another. Yes, the research may say children of divorce go through this. The research is also saying that children from homes that, you know, include domestic violence also go through a lot too. And so we need to really think about what's at the root of the solution, which is investing in functional families 100%. And investing in functional marriages. 100%. And that's why I think for us as a generation, learning how to be in healthy relationships is what's going to be the key marker of difference.
Yeah.
And that requires two individuals who are committed to trying, but also two individuals who have the support they need to become the best version of themselves, not in the cliche way, but literally going on this journey of renewing yourself all the time to be safe for your family. And I don't think we make enough emphasis on that because of how we have covered it with the idolatry of marriage, societal pressure, societal taboo. We're not getting to the root issue of it, which is people don't have the support they need to become the people they need to be for us to have a healthy and functional society, right? And the last thing I was going to say about this is why we all need to participate in advocacy. We all need to be involved in politics. We all need to be involved to some degree in the governing of our society and our communities. But also we need to take active participation in caring for each other and literally being your sister's keeper in that. You know, I know so many people who have been in situations where they can literally hear their neighbor next door going through something or they're seeing certain changes in behavior in somebody.
Yeah.
And because of this, it's not my business, individualistic kind of mentality, we don't get involved in being purveyors of justice and actually being partakers in people's survival and people's well-being.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us need to become more active participants in the lives of those around us. I'm not literally saying, you know, if you hear someone in an altercation, go and literally intersect yourself into that situation,
keep
yourself,
but
call the police,
for
you know,
real
this whole don't be a snitch or this is a private issue is what's also keeping what's also problematic within the judiciary system, yeah, right? Which exactly. is, this is a private issue. No, this is a community issue. Yeah. If these children grow up seeing that dysfunction, they're going to become menaces to society, quite literally. And so it's our communal responsibility to become a part of the justice that we want to see, but yeah. also to pressure the actual justice system yeah. to work. Because I think that's the thing that the lawyer highlighted, which I thought was so important, which is whilst this system may have let us down, it is our duty to test it. Yeah. And it's our duty to actually make sure it works.
Yeah.
And so if you are acquainted with it, if you're acquainted with policies, laws, community things we're entitled to mm-hmm. make sure these things don't happen, then we need to also hold people accountable to deliver it. And I think a lot of us have that shrug my shoulders, it's not my problem mentality. And that's what's allowing the government, the police, the law system, and also communities to get away with it, because we're not holding them accountable to what it is they said they mm-hmm, should do. Mm-hmm. And even from a religious context, it's then knowing the text well enough from an exegetical with an exegetical approach to then know how to hold people accountable using religion, right? Because if you aren't aware or acquainted with the text and what God is truly saying to us as people, you won't even know that there are people who are abusing their religious power
literally
and doing things in the wrong way. So I think all of us as individuals also need to do our duty to know what we are entitled to know what we should be seeing as a healthy society ideally, and putting pressure on certain necks to make sure that we get that. That's what I was gonna say.
No, wonderful, man. I think one of the greatest downfalls of society is the abdication of that communal love.
Absolutely.
We literally need people. And I think there was actually a point that was made by the man that had been married for 3 years and had separated every single year.
No, he said countless times. I'm taking it as more than seven.
We separated countless times. I was like, baby, what is going on here?
I'm taking it to be every quarter. You guys are beating each other out of the house.
Y'all got a kid. You talking about anti-divorce?
And you think that won't damage that child's development?
But surely we can overcome it by staying together. Nah, man, sometimes you gotta go to jail. Sometimes some of y'all gotta go to jail.
To reconcile.
Reconciliation. But I also just want to come back really quickly to holding people accountable by enforcing consequences.
Yes.
I need consequences for bad behavior. Because I think the stigma that is associated with divorce or like women's partaking in, you know, breaking up of families is all well and good. But on the part of perpetrators, on the part of those that are abusive, on the part of people that have actively checked out of that relationship and have allowed the onus of the relationship to rest solely on the shoulders of women, I need consequences for you. Back in the olden days, it was beating you guys up. I'm not saying that I'm for violence. But I do think there is something, particularly with men, they need to be held accountable in a way that's not just being held accountable by your wife, not just being held accountable by the women within your community, but I actually need some more support structures for men that not only help support and develop them, but also dole out consequences for bad behavior.
Absolutely.
Because there's just entirely too many tropes around neglectful men in a lot of these instances, right? If you're not absent as a father or as a husband, you're there and you're an active perpetrator of abuse. You need to go. Consequences. If it is at jail time, separation. And I think because in a lot of these conversations, they are the owners of, or they're the ones that dictate what the material conditions of that relationship are, right? The providers or whatnot. Because they have access to that kind of power, while oftentimes their partner doesn't. Child, maybe we need to start giving people fines.
No, we need to start sending people to prison.
Prison and fines.
We need authorities to actually start doing what they say they are going to do, right? Which is protect society.
Ridiculous.
So if you have authority from a legal point of view, if you're a police officer, if you're a judge, whatever, if you have authority within your community, maybe you're a religious leader or you are somebody who just carries some degree of influence, we need authorities to actually start sharing a more holistic message around what is good and what is bad. Oftentimes authority figures will emphasize, we don't want divorce.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So what do we want? Change. We want change. Rehabilitation. Right? And that requires consequences. That requires accountability. And accountability looks like journeying with people. Absolutely. Yeah. But it also looks like rebuking.
Yeah.
You need to rebuke people, and you have to let people know if you're going to commit a crime,
yeah,
it now becomes a criminal issue. And we have to hand you over to the criminal justice system. It's actually 1, 2, 3. It's a sequence of events.
And as much as you can say, I repent, I'm sorry,
it's I love that
for you.
And we accept that. That's it. What I said. Your soul is saved, but your body needs to go to jail. So where's the confusion?
There needs to be consequences. There we go.
You honor the law of the land, and the law says you're a criminal.
Give to Caesar's as due unto Caesar. He needs your time in jail.
Do your due service. Yeah. You've got to go. And of course, you may be thinking, but you wouldn't. That's not very neighborly. Do to your neighbor as you would do to yourself. I wouldn't commit a crime.
And if I did, you
catch me. Whilst I may fight it, I know that my rightful consequence on earth,
you've got to take it,
is because what we often mistake is this supernatural godly grace, and forget that the legal system doesn't work like that. God as judge is different to the judge sitting with the gavel. They are two different people. God as judge, right, is completely different issue to the person who studied for years to become a judge. That person is there to do their purpose. In fact, God instructed them to send you to jail.
God will be like, babes.
Babes,
I love you.
You've got to go to prison.
You gotta
Did
go.
Paul and Silas not pray from inside the jail? You're going to prison. It's a part of your persecution. It's a part of your faith journey.
You ain't going to get out before your time.
And you can't praise your way out.
You gotta do... You gotta, unless the Holy Spirit, God himself comes out.
And why did Paul and Silas go to jail? Now, of course, you can say it was injustice, but they were ruffling feathers. And by God's divine grace, they got out because they were called for that assignment. You are going to prison. And that's going to be a part of your story. Yeah, and I hope that whilst you're in your prison cell, you encounter God.
Yeah.
I pray that you work on yourself. They go to prison and read books. They even get degrees.
Listen, maybe when you come out, if you come out and it's not a life sentence, because for some of you it needs to be a life sentence.
It's going to be forever.
When you come out, do right.
Do right. It's that simple.
And just like there are literally a litany of scriptures. Obviously, we are like biased from the Christian perspective.
Yes, we are.
There are a litany of scriptures that instruct you as to how to be a good man and a good husband in a lot of these contexts.
And a good wife.
Because
there are men also, a lot of men who experience domestic violence.
Ooh, that was even another point that I wanted to share. Whilst we were having a conversation of divorce, oftentimes we are speaking about the women's perspective, the woman initiating the divorce, and there wasn't really a perspective coming from men that initiate divorce. And I think that's also really interesting, because I would definitely need to check the research on this, but my inclination is that A, women are more likely to initiate divorce than men, but also B, have divorces increased since divorce became more readily accessible to women?
As in overall.
Absolutely. I definitely feel like there's definitely been a lot of stats around like who is happier in marriages, who benefits from marriage. And I've obviously, like, for all intents and purposes, oftentimes it's the man that benefits a lot in marriage. So I wonder if a lot of people that are kind of like anti-divorce, a lot of people that are like, oh, divorce is now so willy-nilly. I wonder if your rage and irateness is misplaced. You really should be focusing on, okay, it's not necessarily that divorces are becoming more and more accessible, but why is it that women are now more likely to pursue divorce? Is it that there were happy marriages and now people are starting to feel like, oh, I can just get divorced, whatever? Or were marriages already extremely unhappy, but now that women actually have more opportunity to get freedom and end it legally, they're just taking that opportunity?
I think that is a part of it, but I also think the secularization of society is a huge contributor to
it.
So I think it's, but has divorce been on the rise? Absolutely. Year on year.
And I do think that the secularization of divorce, I think it's been a pendulum swing, right? Because a lot of the narratives that we've had in the olden days is endure, endure, endure.
Yes.
What happens is it's almost like a slow pressure cooker, right? You keep on telling people to endure until they've had enough, and then their tolerance swing the absolute complete other way.
Yeah.
So I do think that the rise in divorce and the normalization of it has also come as a result of this build up of constantly seeing and hearing these narratives of marriage endurance in the face of absolute extreme conditions. Yeah. Do I think it's right? Absolutely not. Yeah. However, I can understand why a lot of people, having seen that, and I think for all intents and purposes, a lot of people that have been in relationships or have been products of marriages that have been dysfunctional are now completely... They just do not want to get married. They're divested from it. Any way out, any simple inconvenience, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I'm out of here.
Absolutely.
I get it.
Absolutely.
It's unfortunate, but I get it.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you and I completely understand. And I do think another thing that was missing from that conversation was that thing. Oftentimes it's actually missing from a lot of conversation, which is men who are victims of abuse.
Right.
And men who also feel as though they must end this relationship because it is irreconcilable. And I do think as women, it is, this thing works both ways.
Yeah.
Taboo can actually be weaponized in a different direction, which is because men are often, what's the word? Because men's experience of abuse are often invalidated, right? And also there is an embarrassment and a shame that surrounds it. There may be a lot of men who may want to exit relationships who feel like they must actually stay. And I will say, as women as well, we must take the responsibility to make sure that just because the pendulum has swung the other way, we are not becoming perpetrators of abuse, whether verbal, physical, emotional. Because I think...
Do I want to say that? Is it controversial?
Absolutely.
Oh, dear.
I do think, basically on the back of what you said, when the pendulum does swing, what we can try to do is also take as much power with 100%. It as we can.
Oh, yeah.
And that can then be doled out in a very abusive way, in a way to kind of try and subvert power or in some kind of ways rebel, know? And so I do think even with the rise of the much needed liberal movement and women becoming more empowered to be who they are called to be, we need to be careful not to become the people we despise, and not to become the things that we despise and the things that have ruined society. Because growing up in a household where, and this may be your experience or not, where your mother is also a tyrant may be an issue, right? Or where you have a father who is a bit more passive and a mother who is a bit more abusive or tyrannical, that can also be a dynamic of dysfunction, which we also need to not come into either. And I think that's a part of it which sometimes we ignore, which is that women can do wrong. Like women can actually need to take accountability to make sure that we are also safe. Now, I'm not saying this is the prevailing narrative, but when you do look at statistics around men who are victims of domestic violence, they are actually really, really high. Like really, really high. And I think the reason is because women's abuse is not, whilst there is shame,
seen that serious.
Exactly. Whilst there is shame surrounding it for the man who's the victim, we do not rebuke it and chastise it enough, right? I remember talking to a friend and she was arguing with her boyfriend and she like punched him. And then he was not punched him like in a violent way, like in the face, but like punched his arm and he was like, please do not display the like violent behavior towards me. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, how many of us are used to a woman getting angry and then throwing hands or, you know, throwing something at you? And it's just, it's her, you know, having a moment. Mm-hmm. And it's like, actually, no, if a man was to do that to you, and if we're saying we're rising to a point of equality, we also need to be careful that we do not become, you know, perpetrators of the things that we have talked about extensively for the last hour. So I think it goes both ways.
Yeah.
We all need to rise up to the occasion of being people who can sustain a healthy relationship, but also realizing that relationships are reciprocal.
Yeah,
and it requires both of you. It requires both of you to be doing that work.
And good work too.
Yeah.
Healthy, functional relationships.
And it requires communities and society to do their part. Listen. This is an ecosystem. This is an ecosystem.
Listen, all this, my man. It's no, because the individual agenda that the West is perpetrating.
Oh man.
It's bad.
Man.
Okay,
man.
This is a manifestation of late stage capitalism.
Absolutely. And I don't think we deep how necessary healthy and functional families are to society.
You know what was even funny? Sorry, there was a comment one of the guys made when Auntie over here was talking about her experience of abuse, and he was like, "Oh, maybe you know, you decided to leave him after a while because your friends were speaking into your ear." I was like, "Damn straight,"
and that also being a point of criticism This is why isolation is the first step of abusive behavior.
Listen, do you think that I could ever be married to a man and being abused and I go to tell Courtney?
Do you think I won't be ringing a horn outside of your house every day?
You know that meme of a messenger saying, quam, 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 breaking news.
I would even lead the legal investigation against your husband. Are you mad?
You know those crowds of like pitchforks?
I'll have my signs. He is an abuser. Please extricate my friend. This is a hostage situation. Literally,
you whether know when you the FBI is trying to negotiate, Courtney would be like, "We do not negotiate with terrorists."
I would. Oh, I'd be so loud. What? And that's the thing. Like within my family, like the women in my family who unfortunately have experienced abuse, I have been known as like, I am the whistle blower. Like I am the one who will stop this now. Like ever since I was a kid, and I think that is really sad because you find a lot of women who are trying to support their sisters who then find themselves on the receiving end of some kind of abuse or, you know, defamation of character when actually I'm just trying to care for my friend. I'm not trying to ruin your home. You did that.
Oh.
Not me.
110%. You think I would be... Courtney.
And I think that's the... we barely mentioned... Well, we've... It's underlying. It's implicit. I think oftentimes that's one of the biggest criticisms of the modern woman, which is she's rebellious. She's causing people to really, you know, move away from these traditional values. But actually, a lot of modernity is calling people to have their own agency and their own ability to make choices without coercion and without that external pressure. And so it's sad that modern women are labeled with the whole, oh, you've probably been listening to your friends.
Yeah, that's
yes,
true.
I have, because my friends also care for my best interest. 110%. Right?
Be outside your house with a baseball bat. Let's go. Since you want to fight.
Since you want to fight.
We can go a couple rounds. I bought my bat.
Since you want to. It's crazy. So annoying. Like, it really makes me sad. I think more of us as sisters as well should really stand up to call out these things. No matter how young your friend is, no matter how old they are, when you see injustice happening and they don't seem to even see it for themselves, or they've become so used to it and desensitized to it, it is your job to remind them that, one, this is not okay. It may be normal, but it's not okay. And two, they not only deserve better than this, no matter how they view themselves as a human, they have rights and they should be reminded of that. And I think it's complex because interpersonal politics, you know, your friend may then cut you off because you've called out something, but do your part.
Right.
Do not become complicit and do not become an accessory to something or an enabler to something either. Like, do your part. We need justice. I don't think people understand. Like, it really pisses me off, Renee. We need justice. And I need more people to care about that. Because this whole shrug my shoulders, it's not my business mentality is actually what's killing people.
Honestly. And I think also this whole idea of like, we are not our ancestors. We are not the, you know, generation. Sometimes this generation, we can be the biggest enablers of bad behavior.
We are not our ancestors. Get out of
no,
here.
No, that's the, you know, there's even idiot. A merchandise, even merchandise on it. Oh my gosh.
I am not my
but
ancestors.
I would, at this juncture, I recommend that you read our book again. There's a story of my mother actually modeling the behavior of somebody that intercedes on behalf of a sister or her sister that was a victim of domestic violence. And actually seeing that example to me was really, really important, because similarly to you, whenever there is nonsense happening in my family, I am the loudmouth to say, no, stop it. Can't continue. And I think it's important for us to advocate on behalf of our sisters and be there to be supportive, even when they can't advocate for themselves. It's even more important. And this is why community is important. We can notice things, as you were saying earlier, behavioral changes. We can notice if that environment is no longer safe, especially when there are children involved. I think it is having the bigger picture and understanding that our requirements, our prerequisites as friends, as caregivers, is to make sure that families and households are taken care of as best as we can. And actually stand, when we say, oh, my sister's keeper, child,
we need you to mean it.
Stand up and keep.
We need you.
What
to
are you
really
keeping if this
it.
This person is, you know, constantly, even in, it doesn't even necessarily have to be physical abuse, right? It can be other types of abuse. There's
mental,
financial,
emotional,
mental, emotional abuse, making sure that obviously you don't want to be up in somebody's business, but you need to be around their business. Yeah. You need to be milling around, yeah, circling, orbiting, yeah, making sure, because there's just, we can say all of these big things and say it could never be me, but it easily could be you. It's so easy, to be silent.
Very
so
easy to be silent. Very and also as a sister, be observant. Yeah. Like be observant about certain, you know, behavioral changes, physical changes, yeah, changes in disposition. And I guess this isn't just this episode is on divorce, and that's not simply about gender-based violence, but it is important for us to really do our best to make sure that society is functioning and that people's human rights are not being violated. Mm-hmm. And that requires you to use your voice, not just on a public stage, but more, yeah, importantly, in your private sphere of people, in your community, in your friends, in their lives, yeah, to really let them know that their voice is also something that's important. Right. Their voice actually matters. Their life actually matters. And societal pressures should not make people, should not be killing people. Shouldn't be killing people. So yeah, do your bit. Do your bit. Read our book. But even outside of reading our book, go and do something after this podcast.
And if you are going to do research, I implore you to do a wide-ranging amount of research. Yeah, yeah. We are happy to provide some kind of links and stuff like that. But I do think we often talk about critical thinking on this podcast, yeah, a lot. Don't allow your views to solely be based on an erratic amalgamation of things that you find on the internet. Yeah. Do some wide reading. Yeah. Listen to the experience of survivors as well. I think, yeah, sometimes we say, oh, do your bit, Google. We forget about the importance of lived experiences. Yeah. And I think that's what contributes to a lot of tone deafness when we have, you know, yeah, conversations. We lack that empathy. We lack that emotional connection. So research is not just about reading random things on the internet, but actually connecting with people, yeah, people that are within your community as well. We've been so impacted by the stories of people that are within our ecosystem. Do your research, sit with people that have, yeah, either been through these experiences, or try and find people within the community that you can have conversations with. That is also valid research and valid ways to educate yourself. Yeah. Please, please, please. It's not just head knowledge, it's also heart knowledge. Please, 100%. Please.
There is nothing light about marriage and a lifetime commitment. There's nothing light about having kids and choosing to bring them into the world. All of these things come with responsibility.
Capital R.
Yeah. Yeah, big letters actually, big, all of them.
All of them
in every
caps,
word in capital.
All caps,
responsibility.
Responsibility. Yeah.
Responsibility, mm-hmm, and duty to people and duty to community. Yeah. But anyway, thank you so much for listening to this episode. We hope that it was thought-provoking and it provokes you to actually change or be a part of the change you want to see in your world and, yeah, in your community as well. Sure. Shout out to the channel that put this video into the world. Obviously, people's views are their own and you just gave us the content. So thank you for giving conversation starters.
Yeah. Very good.
We'll leave it linked in the description if you want to check it out. Like I said, it's highly triggering. But yeah, sis, we hope that you have an amazing weekend, that you enjoyed this episode. Please follow us on all social media platforms. What was that?
Out. Are you casting out a devil that was listening?
I hope so. At To My Sisterhood. Search To My Sisters everywhere to find us. And you can follow us individually. My best friend at Renee Kapuku and I at CD Boising.
And of course, you can always tune in to the wisdom, the pearls, the insight of our weekly mailing list. www.tomysisters.com. It's really quite simple. We say it every week that you should join. Yeah. Some of you are ignoring, or perhaps some of you are dropping off before this point, which is why you're not getting this juice. But such is life. For those of you that have reached the end of this episode, you are with us and you're probably a long-time listener, a fan, or somebody that's got their head screwed on correctly. And we love that over here. So make sure you sign up to our mailing list for those weekly glowing and growing tips.
We love to see it. While sis is having a good week, have a really good week.
Happy Easter.
We hope that the heaviness of this does not crush you. But yeah, actually, happy Easter. Yeah. You know, there is actually hope. There is actually hope.
There is hope. It may be April Fool's, but don't let any man take you for idiot.
Facts.